Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I want to say, for the sake of all those listening on the web who aren't here in person, we have an enormous turnout. It's going to be a very interesting debate. It's almost standing room only, I think. So this should be exciting. And I want you to all know that this section, population, reproductive, and sexual health section, has a motto, a theme for all of our sessions at this conference: global reproductive health, innovation, and debate. And I underscored debate on this slide because I see lots of people here who might very well put their hand up and take contrarian positions, which is great. We should have a good discussion about this. I also want to tell you, related to this title slide, that I have added, perhaps against his wishes, I have added my co-author, Dr. Ross Danielson from Portland, who was our former section chief, retired, who is helping me crunch the numbers, because I'm not a scientist, I'm an educator, and Ross, whether he likes it or not, is going to probably have to speak to all of you about any questions of data. And I want to warn you also that we have very little data, very little solid data. This is a very anecdotal and subjective evaluation that I'm going to report to you. It comes very much from a qualitative evaluation where I interviewed lots of young people. It was very hard, obviously, for an old white male to talk about sexual intimate matters with young African kids. So I'm prepared for you scientists out there to either walk out or argue with me about my conclusions. I also wanted to, my main warning. My warning is not that we have a lot of salacious or prurient information to tell you about healthy sexuality. That was just to get you all into the room. But in fact, we are going to demonstrate sexual abstinence. We're both 70-year-old men, and unfortunately, it's not very exciting to watch. But you're welcome, nonetheless, to share this 10 minutes with me. I'm a lefty. Okay. I also wanted to introduce myself because my work in this field over the last 50 years was mostly in Africa and mostly with faith-based organizations, such as the one I'm going to talk about today. But I wanted to introduce myself because a lot of this work that I've done is reflected in my talk today. And my work began as a volunteer with a Methodist Mission Hospital in Cameroon in 1960 when I was 17, before most of you were born. And it's continued to this research I'm going to talk about today. And I have a disclaimer. Although I did not have any relationships with commercial interests, I was paid by USAID. That, for some of you, that might make me suspect to begin with. I also, the money was from USAID to the FBO that I'm going to talk about, and an evaluator who's paid by the organization that he's evaluating is also suspect. But my other disclaimer is that I'm not a true believer. I'm not an active Christian. I have faith in faith-based organizations, but I don't have the faith with a capital F. In fact, I was surprised to be hired by this faith-based organization, which is an evangelical group, because I told them I am pro-choice, pro-condom. I've worked on marketing condoms for many years in Africa and elsewhere. And in fact, I'm very pro-choice because I was the director of the foundation that took an unknown test case to the Supreme Court called Roe versus Wade 40 years ago almost. And the FBO hired me to look at their program because they wanted someone who was not preaching to the choir, an outsider who was actually skeptical of the faith-based organization's involvement with sexuality education. So that's what I wanted to talk about. I support faith-based organizations and their promotion of ABC. That is obviously my take-home message today, that these faith-based organizations are not just increasingly providing ABC, I'll talk about what it is, but they're increasingly involved in it, including condom promotion, and for good reason, because they are very, very widely accepted and trusted. They are local organizations. Generally, we're not talking about foreign missionaries. We're talking about locally committed, community-based, and often, as I say, apolitical leaders. They work, however, very closely with local traditional leaders and community leaders, and in ideal situations, they work with traditional healers. And remember, traditional healers are providing a good deal of local health care. They've been in these local communities for, maybe not forever, but for a century, many of them. They last. They're sustainable. They are financially and managerially sustainable. They work often with other faith-based organizations and non-government organizations. And they work with government, and government often funds their health care and their schools because there are no other public schools or clinics in the areas. And I'm talking about different kinds of health care, including orphanages and elder care. And because sexuality is so sensitive and so controversial, it actually helps to have faith-based organizations deal with these traditional questions and moral questions, even in these sensitive matters of sexuality and condoms. So I have faith in FBOs, and the ABC approach as well. The ABC approach is not what you may think. It's not just abstinence only. That's another take-home message. None of the programs that I've evaluated over the last decades have been abstinence only. And the best statement of what ABC represents appeared in this letter that I co-signed in The Lancet, the medical journal from England, with the, I think, 150-plus experts all over the world in HIV prevention. We signed a letter in 2004 called the Common Ground Statement, which included these words, and I wanted to read them so they're very clear. When targeting youth who have not started sexual activity, that's a euphemism for sexual intercourse, because all kinds of other sex may be going on and perhaps should be going on, but our first priority with those who are not actively sexual should be to encourage abstinence or delay of sexual onset. And as I'll explain later, that includes secondary abstinence. Then when targeting sexually active adults who have begun sexual intercourse, the priority should be to promote mutual fidelity with an uninfected partner. So that's B. And when targeting people at high risk of AIDS, those who are sexually active and perhaps involving multiple concurrent partners, they should know how to use condoms correctly and consistently. So, why do I bring up this topic? A lot of people roll their eyes when I said I was going to talk about ABC, because you don't hear much about it anymore. It was a very hot topic some years ago. I'm bringing it up because after a good decade or two of focus on AIDS prevention, we've had problems lately keeping up the momentum. I think it was the best of times a decade or more ago. We had increased treatment for AIDS about 22 times from the beginning, from the late 80s to the late 90s. We sharply increased treatment overseas. There was a 25% decline in new infections, and a lot more funding flowed. There were new lower cost treatments available, as you all know, and for the MPH students in the room, there was more PMTCT, prevention of maternal to child transmission. There was voluntary and counseling and treatment, and increasingly there is male circumcision available. Each of these have problems we can discuss, but you have heard lately the very optimistic idea that we are moving toward an AIDS-free world. You heard Hillary talk about it this summer, and everybody thought the treatment as prevention was a real breakthrough. However, there are still approximately 35 million people out there with AIDS. It is almost tragic to me to be talking about an AIDS-free world and giving the lay person an idea that we've conquered the problem. There are 47 countries in sub-Saharan Africa that have an enormous problem that we're not facing. Only a third to two-fifths of people needing it are being treated. There's a drop in funding, and Congress is less and less encouraged to support AIDS programs. We don't know what Romney's going to do. And at the last AIDS meeting in Washington this summer, there was very little talk about behavior change, BCC, behavior change communications. That's the new term for what we used to call health education or sex education. And at this conference, I noticed there's a drop-off in AIDS discussions and AIDS panels, too. So a lot of people complain about providing money to faith-based organizations. This is just one quote, example of the people who oppose supporting religiously inclined organizations, faith-based organizations. It's been very controversial. This guy says it's criminal that we forced our own policies on countries overseas. So I answer, why to revive the ABC debate? Because very little behavior change research is being done. Most programs now to work on AIDS focus on AIDS treatment with biomedical, clinic-based, and commodities-based strategies. And I think what's missing is the most important piece, monitoring and evaluating the effectiveness of the ABC approach, and it's probably going to be controversial. So I think a good example of how we may be deceived is the whole idea of halting transmission by prevention. If you are in early stages of discovering that you are HIV positive, you have to take a cocktail of expensive drugs in order to prevent spreading AIDS to HIV to your partner. Unfortunately, these drugs have to be affordable and available. Organizations simply don't have the money, especially in rural Africa, to provide that kind of medication. So, and I'm sorry to rush through these slides, but I'm running out of time, and I wanted the audio audience who are listening to this to realize that you can look at the slides at a slower pace, and you people who don't have the paid audio subscription at APHA can let me know if you want a copy of the talk. I'll be happy to send you the PowerPoints. So this program I evaluated was one of many grants to faith-based organizations from USAID during the President's Emergency Program for AIDS Research. And the project was an $18 million grant to an NPO, American-based, with many, many partners in Africa. It went from 2004 to 2010, when I did the evaluation. It was to reach 2 million youth in four countries. They did a baseline and end-of-project survey of youth knowledge, attitude, and practices, KAP. And the mid-project evaluation was done by a measure, a firm in Washington. My evaluation involved reviewing these various sources of data that were done, and in each country I had focus groups of one-to-one or small groups of students. And this is in Rwanda, Kenya, and Mozambique. I interviewed the staff who ran this curriculum, this ABC curriculum, and even parents and community leaders. I spent a couple of months in these three countries. My observations were that the younger children, particularly girls, seemed most likely to learn the importance of self-esteem and postponing sexual debut and avoiding unwanted relationships. Older youth were more interested, of course, in both abstinence and secondary abstinence. If they had had sex, they would have reconsidered, many of them who had been forced into sex especially. So the older kids were more interested in sexually transmitted infections and pregnancy and violence, especially violence against women, and condoms, how to use them, and the risks of disinhibition. The program often talked about the fact that condoms are often not used, and that's why there's a lot of opposition to promoting them. I liked the fact that boys and girls in almost all these programs in all three countries were talking together honestly about sexuality, especially the older kids, in ways that I think it was important to them to learn and to communicate. I will skip over most of these data slides because I have ran out of time, but you see that in this case in Kenya, for example, it was about half male and female, around 16 and 17 years average. Parents headed their households, which was unusual in communities where parents had often died. And these were both primary and post-primary students, and about one out of four was Catholic, and other Christian groups. There were some Muslims involved also in the project. The kids learned a lot about how AIDS is transmitted. We do have a little bit of data on how they learned that HIV is not spread by mosquitoes, sharing dishes of food, not spread by witchcraft, and that healthy looking people can also spread HIV. These kinds of things were measurable, easily measured. The students learned about the stigma against people with AIDS. They would buy from food sellers or teachers. They would study with teachers in school, continue to be friends with people who were HIV positive. So It was more difficult, of course, to study whether the youth would actually abstain from unsafe sex, but there was a high level of self-efficacy going in, an even higher level finishing the program, 91%. There were very happy people that I interviewed most of the time. I talked to the critics too, but I wanted to share with you the positive opinions. Here was a pastor in Mozambique who was very skeptical at first about introducing anything in his church, his Sunday school, related to sexuality, and he became very pleased with the efforts to reach youth, including getting the kids to pledge abstinence, the younger kids. He hadn't expected it. He said, "I'm excited to see young people be interested in their future, and ABC plays a crucial role in this teaching." There was one kid who really was memorable. By the way, I recorded a lot of these interviews with their permission, of course, and didn't collect names, but I'm trying to put together an audio program, and maybe I took videos. I'm going to, hopefully by the Boston conference next year, I'm going to try to put together some videos of these kids. Because the skeptics who see the children talking about what they've learned, I think even though I did treat this project anecdotally and qualitatively, it's pretty powerful to see the kids themselves talking about what they feel, and you don't sense that they are distorting things. So this kid had been using drugs, having a lot of sex. He learned a lot about self-esteem, which was new to him, the whole concept. And he learned a lot about STIs as well as HIV. And he was finally, because of the program, getting his infections treated. Same with this guy. He was changed by the program. You can read these later. There was a girl who was 11 years old I talked to, whose mother had tried to get her married off to a boy who paid dowry, an older kid, a younger man. And she told me the story of how she avoided getting married and she stayed in school. So you can read these later. My conclusion is, sorry to take so long, my conclusion is that I think the program was great, especially for girls, but boys only, and I have a special interest in working with young men. I think there should be more focus on the being faithful, because of many of these kids being sexually active early on. The importance of infection transmitted by multiple concurrent partners who've just become positive and don't know it, and we call it MCP, that's the biggest risk, the biggest cause of Southern Africa being the epicenter of this terrible plague, is that there's so much migration and so many multiple concurrent partnerships. That needs to be emphasized. And of course, the faith-based organizations who have been uncomfortable about promoting condoms are learning how to do it. We have to think about compensatory risk-taking or disinhibition, that kids who've discovered condoms might be having more sex earlier with more people, and we need to pay attention to that problem. That's another issue we can debate this morning. But I think that the key at this point is to do better monitoring and evaluation studies of these ABC programs, because they are badly needed. I have sources here of people who've helped enormously for me over many years to understand this issue, and many people have helped me too. So thank you for letting me go over time.